this is podcast number one of our Final K podcast. This is something new. I, Coach Chris, am here with
Gabby.
Coach Gabby, right?
Coach Gabby.
Don't take the coach out of there. You gotta give that up.
Give myself some credit.
So our goal here is we're gonna try and drop some knowledge and talk about some important things, I think, that at least we think are important to us for about the next 25 minutes, and hopefully you find some relevance and importance there. And going forward, we're going to breach on topics that will range everything from 90s hip-hop to multi-sport training to playlists for Ironmans to what you should eat on the run. Wouldn't you say?
I would definitely say so.
All right.
And shooting the breeze in the meantime.
Oh, yeah. Because, we're normal human beings. We like to talk about such.
Doesn't need to be all triathlon.
No. Because that's boring, right?
It is boring.
Nobody likes a podcast where you're just talking about the same stuff all over.
No.
It needs to have a little flavor.
Yeah.
Well, let's dig into this right away. So recently being just the last couple weeks, a revelation has come out in the realm of endurance cycling, professional cycling, that is, about doping.
This is the first I've heard about it, too.
It is. So Chris Froome, you know who Chris Froome is?
I do.
World class.
Froomey.
It's supposed to be the next best thing, right? Mm-hmm. Gonna one away from winning and becoming in the big five is kind of like the next Lance.
Potentially.
But
for more than one reason.
Oh. Test dirty in the Vuelta. So salbutamol is a drug that is limited to 1,000 nanograms per milliliter in your urine content.
So is this an inhaler or is it just a pill?
I think it can be both.
Okay.
Because it's described as a medication for asthma relief, because Chris Froome has said that he suffers from asthma.
Yep.
And he said that during the Vuelta he was having some asthma issues, so he took enough of this medication so as not to violate any sort of doping standards, or so he thought.
Sure.
Now, every person who's dope said that they were doing it for the right intentions. That was totally misconstrued. If you think back to some of the other ones that we've seen, another one that came from the Vuelta a couple of years ago was Alberto Contador said that he had the quote unquote tainted steak, which had remnants of plastic,
seems a little far-fetched.
Yep. So, and the plastic is normally from inside IV lines. And he had remnants of those in his blood system. So whether he is telling the truth or he is not, I think it's between him and his maker. But it does broach a good coaching conversation. So you've been coaching for quite a while now, a number of athletes, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's been, 3 years now total coaching.
All right. So have you ever run across a situation where one of your athletes has been popped for doping or tested dirty for any sort of controlled substance? Or have you ever had the inclination that somebody has done something where they're using a controlled substance?
With coaching, no, but I am familiar with all of the doping control from collegiate swimming. All the years we were there, we had to bring in all of our supplements into our strength coach, and he had to approve all the ingredients and make sure it was an approved third-party tested supplement. So we were all kind of paranoid about it because pretty much anyone could get tested at any time.
Okay.
And it happened to several of the athletes on the team, one being tested positive.
What did they test positive for?
Not something that's performance-enhancing.
So like marijuana or cocaine?
Yes. All right. Marijuana. So I don't really consider that performance enhancement. But
so would that actually be something that would take you off the team? Because doesn't that kind of draw you back or make you less of an athlete?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was suspended for several weeks, so it's a problem.
But none of his results were removed from the record books because of his infraction?
No.
All right. Well, that's good. Have you ever thought about what you might do should one of your athletes become a positive test. Because if you know now that that USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, is becoming more active in dope checking age group athletes, mm-hmm. especially since it's been widely speculated that in Ironman, mm-hmm. that or at least in the Ironman distance, that that doping infractions are occurring with age groupers.
Well, I could see that. I mean, we kind of fly under the radar, but you're kind of looking, those top age groupers are probably looking to get to the next level, and they think in order to get there, they're going to do anything they can, and that might be something illegal because they're not being tested.
Absolutely.
Frequently. Yeah.
So I wonder if at some point in time, have you begun to prepare the conversation that you would have with an athlete? Have you thought about what you would do with them? Would you take and remove them from your quiver? Would you essentially fire them? Would you not work with somebody if they had? Would you be an advocate for them? Have you began to think about how that would come around?
Well, I think the first thing I'd want to find out is, you know, their side of the story and see what happened. Because I do know there's so many supplements out there nowadays that, and nothing is, most things are not FDA approved. So if you go on taking some supplement that you might not know all the ingredients and you get busted, then I'd feel pretty bad for that person because they maybe didn't intentionally do it. So if that was the case, I think I would honestly be an advocate for them. But if it was an outright, you know, very fair and square, cut and dry, cheating, caught doping kind of a case, I think I would cut them loose.
So let's say it's somebody who's been a top-notch athlete of yours. Let's say it's somebody that's a top-ranked age group athlete. Mm-hmm. Always done really well. And let's put them in the Chris Froome scenario. They test positive for an asthma drug, mm-hmm. and you're not quite sure if they actually have asthma or if they how much that is an impact of theirs. Where do you go with that? Do you judge that individually? Then, I mean, does it become like a judgment call on if you quote unquote believe them or not?
Well, I mean, I do feel that these, you know, you kind of have to discipline everyone the same. Otherwise, you know, there is going to lose some credibility to the doping standards. But at the same time, since, you know, you don't know everyone's circumstance, it's kind of hard to follow that hard law of either you're in or you're out. You're either negative or you're positive. So I think it could go either way, honestly. I think it's a really hard spot to be in, but I think our sport is becoming harder and harder to regulate and control. So,
yeah. I've often thought about this because it has come up, and I think I would have to make like one of those hard lines one way or the other, because the conversation that I end up having with myself is, first of all, it's creepy that I'm having a conversation with myself. So let's just put that out there. but what I would normally say is that, how does this reflect on you? So you may have all the belief in the world, or may have the thought that, you know, this person was not doing it on purpose, or maybe it was a mistake, but inevitably, does that come back to reflect on you and your coaching? Meaning, does somebody now equate you with them? Because if you watch a lot of these high-profile dopers, it has always come back to where they're coming from.
Well, you look at Salazar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what it does is, and he may have nothing to do with it, right?
Absolutely.
But the question is always arisen. Mm-hmm. And it always, his name always then comes around with that. Whereas he's not the one that's taking it, but is he the one that's prescribing it? Or mm-hmm. is he encouraging it? Or is he looking past it? So in that respect, I think you have to take into consideration your
own credibility.
Yeah, I think you do have to take in your own credibility. And I think drawing a hard line might be the necessary move to make there.
Mm-hmm.
Without doing that, I think you risk opening yourself up to too much. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing, though that's a bad thing. But that's something that I think has to be taken into consideration. I have seen where some new coaches make clients sign waivers that says, you know, I will not do this, or I pledge not to take anything.
Yeah, I've seen that. Even going on to swim in college, we had to sign, you know, some waivers saying we were going to participate clean and such. So that's pretty common. And I think that's a great thing, and it kind of holds the athlete accountable. But
that's on a collegiate level, or even on a high school level. I mean, that's been around for a long time. I mean, actually, they made fun of that in the movie. What was the Matthew McConaughey movie? The All Right, All Right, All Right, All Right.
Oh, crap. And I'm a big Matthew
Dazed and Confused. Yeah, come on. It was Dazed and Confused.
Oh, no.
So, but remember, one of the premises of Dazed and Confused was that the quarterback didn't want to sign that. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to say, no, I'm not going to be clean. And this was in the 70s, and marijuana was a whole different, you know, place there. But I wonder, how many individual coaches do that in multi-sport now, especially working with age groupers. It's different if you're working with collegiate or high school athletes. I think that's a very encapsulated group of people. But I would be, if I had to speculate or guess, I would say maybe less than 4%, 2% of professional multi-sport coaches in the United States actually have some sort of waiver or agreement in place to say if one of their clients gets pipped for doping,
then they get the boot.
They get a viol. They make no claims to being aware of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if that becomes something that would turn a client off, or would say, oh yes, I really want to work with a coach because they're more, you know, clean forward.
I mean, I think if you put that forward right away, it's not only is it good for your reputation as a coach, it just lets the athlete know right up front your opinion on it and that you won't tolerate it. So that athlete's point of view might change, and it'll either make them more inclined to work with you or they'll go away. But do you really want a client who may dope? Probably not.
Yeah, and that brings up another question is, you know, some coaches, especially I'd say newer coaches, one of the things that they're attracted to is
fast athletes.
Exactly. Getting a horse on staff, right? Yep. And having somebody that's winning all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And how much are you willing to look past or accept to have that winning athlete on your team, or to have that winning athlete racing under your banner or wearing your colors, or say that you're their coach?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much are you willing to go out there? Because I think that can be, that can almost be a drug in and of itself.
Oh, coaches prey on that.
Oh yeah.
Unfortunately.
And so I would say that it becomes a conversation that I think everybody needs to probably have with themselves.
Oh yeah.
Before it occurs, mm-hmm. to be able to make that, I would say, the best clean decision where your head's not muddled.
Yep.
Yeah. So have you as an athlete, because Gabby, you're an athlete, still an elite athlete, unlike mm-hmm. myself. You know, I'm just a guy who runs around the lake in 35 minutes. Have you speculated athletes that you've raced against are you using? And you don't have to name names, and I'm not asking you to, but has there been instances where you got beat by somebody that you thought, there's no way on this earth that person should be faster than I am?
Honestly, no. I'm really impressed, at least in my experience with the triathlon community in particular, at least on the women's side of things. I haven't noticed anyone that just shoots out of nowhere and that I would suspect doped. So it's not necessarily in my deck of cards that I've had any experience with. But
do you see it on the men's side? Because you have scope on the men's side too, not only, you know, from a personal aspect, but also from a professional aspect. You see that happening, and I think you're aware of some of those higher level athletes. Has there ever been somebody where you're like, how can that guy be so good for so long, or how can he just come from nowhere and be here? Has there been anybody like that you can think of? And I'm, again, not asking to name names, but just talking in generalizations.
Yeah, I mean, it's always easy to speculate if someone's been doing really well for a really long time. How do they maintain that sort of level of fitness, or if they just shot out of nowhere? But I think I'm the type of person that's going to suspect that it's just their training and that they're a good athlete. So I'm not necessarily the right person to ask.
You're not a skeptic.
I'm not a skeptic.
I was hoping you'd be a skeptic and a cynic, and you'd be like, that dude and that chick and that dude and that dude and that lady over there.
I know. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah. Well, I think it's easier for men probably to dope than women. Probably because I think men are, it's in our DNA to be more aggressive and to take chances. I think there's more,
women tend to think things through a little bit better.
Yeah. You guys are a lot smarter in that range than we are. The other thing is I've always said that you have men who are, you know, I would say in their late 30s, early 40s, they have a ton of expendable income, accessibility to pharmaceuticals, knowledge that there's very little likelihood they're going to get tested, high level of type A personality, guys that are, you know, doing whatever they can, bringing race wheels to, you know, a Tuesday night group ride just so they can win the, you know, the town line sprint.
Well, that's another thing. That's like the mechanical doping.
Oh, yeah.
Type of a scenario. Yeah. You've got this really big, fast bike, but what are you going to do with it?
Exactly. Now, when you say big, fast, are you talking big, fast with like a motor inside?
Well, those are definitely... Those have been accused.
Do you think we'll see? Do you think we will see one in triathlon or have seen any in triathlon?
I mean, you never know. I mean, there's definitely some big Uber cyclists. Then I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, unfortunately they get accused of something like that. Do you know of any big triathletes that have been accused?
Nobody that's had their finger pointed at them.
Yeah.
But I know that there has been speculation with some results where people question how can that person do that much for that long. Especially when you look at Ironman distance and you say, how can someone hold that many watts for that amount of time?
Yeah.
I do think that it is a little bit different than bike racing, because bike racing becomes tactical and there are larger surges that occur. And there is, I think, a closer monitoring of professional cyclists, especially, you know, from a press standpoint. Whereas if you look at even just the photographic coverage of, let's say, the Ironman World Championships, there's, you know, they may cover the first 5-6 guys. Yeah. Beyond that,
no one's covered.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that there could be the thing that we have that I think would prevent it outside of maybe the installation of the magnets and the wheels, which is, you know, the idea of that they're placing magnets inside the rim of the wheel so that it assists every time it goes past the chainstay
or the seat stay.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is they put magnets into the fairing. So think of a head Jet 60.
Sure.
You know, you got a 60 millimeter fairing on there, and so they have magnets built into there. Now it becomes a little bit heavier. And that's how they're kind of finding these out, because they're seeing difference in bike
in
weights,
race.
Especially
okay.
with Team Sky has registered heavier bikes over the past couple of races, couple of Grand Tours. And they're saying it's because this is what they have in there.
Yeah.
They have not gone to the point where they're x-raying their wheels. But the idea is that the magnet goes into the rim, and then there are magnets in the chainstay and in the seat stays that as the wheel goes by, it gives it just a little bit of assist, just a little bit of a shove.
Well, and I think, like, on the side of cycling being a little bit more heavy on the, you know, the watching of the doping, I think some of those more, like, tactical sports where it's, I mean, you're fighting for seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of athletes that I think are really going to be hungry to just do absolutely anything to get that second.
Yep. And I think there's a lot more money in cycling too, so there's more investment into that, and
and
a higher level of risk. Whereas triathlon is, nobody gets rich doing triathlon, do they? No, one really does. I mean, it's like you're either
the top couple, maybe,
and not even rich. They probably can make a living, but only for a certain amount of time. You know, you think about our friend Leanda, Leanda, 4-time world champion, but still, I would say, is she comfortable in her financial situation, whereas she could retire and not have to do anything? Well, I would say the answer there is no.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if somebody is in a regular day job, or if they were in a different profession, you know, where they're making contracts of more money, more stabilized money, they might be in a place where they could feel better about retiring.
Yeah.
But I think that because triathlon doesn't have the amount of money into it, that may limit how much technology is interjected into it, that people kind of get things that are bled from other areas. This as far as mechanical doping, mm-hmm. you know, pharmaceutical doping, you know, that will happen, but I think it's by individuals, you know, and I think more driven by them being, I would say desperate or grasping for something that they feel the need to be able to do, much like Nina Kraft when she won Ironman, mm-hmm. And then her result was taken back. I think that was back in 2005.
Okay.
Also in mechanical doping, I think the design of triathlon bikes are different and make it a little bit more difficult to create that engine.
Yeah.
Because you've seen, like, there was a 60-minute special where they showed how they dropped an engine into the seat tube, and it was like it was a small motor that interacted with the bottom bracket and gave about, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10 to 15 extra watts.
Yeah, that would be a lot over the course of an Ironman.
That would be a lot over the course of an Ironman. But you have to have a certain tubing to be able to make that happen. If you think about triathlon bikes nowadays, they're anything but normal.
Yeah.
You know, anything. Look at the Ventum.
The new P5X.
Exactly. Yeah. They're anything but. I mean, even though they have a lot of room, like, there's basically, you could put a small suitcase or a child inside the front, you know, the front locker there. I think it would be difficult to try and hide something inside a preconceived carbon fiber frame, mm-hmm. and still maintain the continuity of the frame strength itself. And the aerodynamics itself. Yeah. So interesting topics there. You know, outside of that, I think that we're just kind of broaching it. I think doping will always be around.
Oh, absolutely. People are going to find a way around it no matter what.
I mean, people always tend to cheat no matter what.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate reality.
What do you think outside of just the pressures of failing, and, you know, after being great and then not being able to hold on to that, what are some of the other things that pressure people to cheat? Whether it be with doping or cutting a course or, you know, doing anything that's against the rules.
To cut corners. Well, I think if you're the type of person who is just incredibly hungry and something's not going your way and you fall onto something that might give you that extra little bump in performance, you're going to grab onto it if you're hungry enough. And unfortunately, I'm sure what happens to most of these athletes that get caught for doping is they grab onto it because they are so hungry, but they kind of lose sight of what's really fair and what's really right. And it's hard. And I think for some of those athletes that have been good for so long, they'll grab onto that, and then it's sad to see their reputation just blown.
Yeah.
So
it's a hard thing to watch somebody begin to falter.
Yeah.
Especially if you have some level of interest in them.
Oh, absolutely.
Or if you're vested into them.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for anyone who's surrounded by them because, you know, they know who the person is deep down, and to see them falter like that makes them, people who are close to them, question even who that person is.
Yeah. It's something I hope it never happens to anybody we know.
Yeah.
But inevitably, I think the longer that you're involved in the sport, the higher the likelihood that we're going to run into somebody happens to.
Yeah.
I will pinky swear with you right here, never to dope. If cool. You pinky swear with me, never to dope.
All right, promise.
Okay. I'm not going to go as far as putting the tattoo under my arm like some of those cyclists did where it's a picture of a piece of soap that it says clean on it. And so when they raise their hands, it's always showing. And they said if they've ever tested positive. Like, this is Phil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. You know, guys like him that said if they ever get popped for doping or get tested, that their friends can take that off with a cheese grater.
Ouch. Well, one day that bar of soap's going to turn into a sinking ship. Once you get old and wrinkly.
You just have that dropping?
Yeah.
Is that like kind of like the rose turns into a rose bush?
Yeah. Don't want that.
Bar into a sinking ship. I was thinking something else, but that's sinking ship.
You can go a few different ways with that, for sure.
Well, you never know. I mean, I think if you're looking at those guys in the beginning, they don't have a lot to sink. right? I mean, they have...
They are so lean, and they are so scrawny.
Their arms are nothing.
I know.
They have arms, like, that are smaller than my ankles.
Yep.
And, you know...
But one day, when they've got resting metabolisms like the average Joe...
Eating a ton of cookies.
Yep.
Just it's sitting Christmas. Around.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, there's somebody's going to have a little bit more to eat.
Oh, for sure. Oh. Absolutely.
Well, I think that was a pretty interesting conversation. Anything else on the top of your mind today that you want to chitty chat about?
Well, I mean, I'm just looking forward to Christmas.
You are. Okay.
I can't believe it's already like 2 weeks away here.
I know. And you might be hearing this after Christmas, but we're recording it before.
Yeah.
And we're sitting
getting
here
rolling.
Thinking about it and hoping, you know, I'm hoping for a white Christmas.
Yeah. We have snow right now. So let's keep our fingers crossed. It stays.
Yeah, you never know. Are you staying here?
I'm staying here.
All right. You going anywhere for New Year's? Anywhere warm, far?
We are going to a concert on New Year's, Above and Beyond.
Nope.
It's a good 2-hour podcast. So if you're stuck on the trainer inside, like we all are in Minnesota anyways, break that out.
Above and Beyond.
Above and Beyond Group Therapy. They're a good group.
What kind of music is it?
It's more EDM.
Oh,
yep. We got the electronic music going on.
Oh, look at
you. Chris introduced me to it. I wasn't a big fan of it until Chris got me into Tiesto, and then I found Above and Beyond. I will claim that.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's my claim to fame.
That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tiesto.
Yeah.
So you listen to, like, Electric Area on Sirius and stuff like that?
Yep.
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
That's so good. So have you ever been to, like, one of the Electric Daisy festivals?
I haven't. That is on our bucket list.
Okay, in Vegas.
Chris has been to, he's been to Tiesto a couple times, including one time in France, which I'm jealous, but.
Wow.
So he's gotten around to a few different concerts, but never festivals.
Okay. Is the one guy's name Martin Van Buren?
Yep.
He's another guy
that's
I like.
Yep, that's a good one.
He's a good guy. It seems like you have to be a 20-something Belgian to be a good...
Oh, really good.
...good DJ, because you have to talk like we are going to listen to the music of these people here. And
but it's so nice to listen to them talk, isn't
it? Oh, they're so talking like... They talk like they're just really nice.
Yep.
I'm doing it no justice.
Above and Beyond, though, is UK.
Is it all UK?
Yep, yep.
Okay.
So they're fun to talk. Listen to.
So maybe you can vacation in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And, you know, but just make sure when you're there, you're not taking any illegal controlled substances. Don't drop any E or,
yep.
you know, take,
yep.
you know, grab any of the
stuff.
Little popsicles that might come around
yep.
or suckers. Just
don't
like,
know
you
what's
know,
in them.
Just jump around and twirl your glow sticks.
Yep.
All right. Because you did take a pinky swear.
I did take a pinky swear.
And I don't want to have to
can't
read about
it. Can't go back on pinky swears.
I don't want to read about you. It's like, because at some point we read, you know, in Triathlete Magazine, you know, Coach Gabby popped for you know,
E
for illegal drug use. And it's like, you know, either he's like, no, I didn't know those were the cocaine Rice Krispie bars.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Sure,
yeah.
you did it.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's going to believe you, just like we don't believe Chris Froome. Well, mm-hmm. I should say not many people are believing Chris Froome.
Yep.
So,
Contador.
Or Contador. No, I just don't like Contador anyways, because I'm not hipped on the old Pistola.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just my thing. Maybe that's my hang up, but just never was really hip on the Pistola. Also, he attacked Andy Schleck. No, Frank Schleck when he dropped his chain to take away his yellow jersey. Nope. No, that was another Tour de France moment. Just going to say, I just don't forgive easily. Mm-hmm. I don't forgive. I don't forget.
Are you counting down the days till we...
In. Oh yeah,
to
I think.
That.
Oh yeah, actually, we're looking about going to follow the Giro.
Oh really?
It's the 100th anniversary of the Giro this year.
Now when is that?
That is in May. It's
okay.
Usually
where?
Giro d'Italia.
Okay.
So
Italy, the best food ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's the 100th anniversary of that. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Is Jill coming with you?
Of course she would. We'd bring my mom as well.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
But the kids, the hoodlums are staying here?
Hells to the no.
They're
not going to bring them there.
Yeah,
not
going
to bring them there.
Good.
Maybe in coming years, but not now.
An actual adult vacation.
Exactly. Well, Gabs, I thank you for talking with me today. It's podcast number one in the books.
Yeah.
High fives.
Good job.
History has been made.
Yeah.
Well, we encourage you guys to check back and listen often. We are going to be just as funny and as thorough and as insightful, if not more so. in coming weeks and coming months.
Yeah, so, hopefully we learn something.
Hopefully.
So, tell us what you think.
Yeah, write a like my son says when he watches these YouTube videos, put it in the comments.
Yeah.
You know, subscribe today. Isn't that what it is?
But be nice.
But be nice, yeah. Just no trolls. No trolls. No hating.
We don't need some trolls.
Exactly. No one likes a troll. So.
Stay under your bridge.
All right, everybody. You stay classy out there.
All right.
Bye.
See you later.